Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips for our weekly discussion of world affairs. This week we talk quite a bit about the problems that Facebook is having with governments, and governments are having with Facebook. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon, of course, we're joined by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He's joining us from London. And just as always, to remind you, it's late into the evening. As a matter of fact, 5 hours, or no, maybe 4 hours ahead of us now that we're enjoying daylight savings. I'll find out about that in a moment. But as always, just to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, good evening to you. And just out of curiosity, how is spring springing for those of you in the United Kingdom and in Europe?
It looks like it's sprung.
Wow.
It's lovely outside. Now, earlier this week and over the weekend, we had another mini beast from the east. It turned incredibly cold. We had snow again. But now the temperatures are going up. The grass is drying out. The daffodils are popping up all over the place. And it's looking very spring-like.
Well, then it should be a wonderful weekend ahead of you. And of course, we're now planning to dig out from snow, particularly in the Northeast. That beast from the East is hanging around with us right now. Sadly, you may also be feeling it at a later point as well. I want to move to the issue of the flowers in the United Kingdom. We've had folks talk about this. With this weather, what impact does this have on the gardens?
Well, my particular garden is a complete mess because it's waterlogged.
Ah.
That's the big thing. We've had a very, very wet winter. It's been very cold, but also very wet. And so the flowers are late in coming out this year. And some of them, like some of the bulbs, are literally rotting in the ground.
My goodness. All right. We've heard comments and had callers mention in the past about the gardens, the British gardens. Another quick question for you, Tom, before we get into events that are not quite as important. Let's talk about the movement of time. What's the status of daylight savings in your fair city?
Well, it changes the last Saturday of March. And so we're back to being 5 hours behind you. Was it 5 hours ahead of you? I never can remember when. Which, 5 hours ahead of you,
mm-hmm.
The last Saturday in March.
Okay, so right now you're only a mere 4 hours ahead of us. Be careful. We're catching up. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Tom, few items, just quick notes on some events taking place in the States. Curious how the coverage is being provided there in the European press and the United Kingdom. Topics such as the Austin bomber, and we had a school shooter yesterday in Maryland. What kind of coverage is being generated as a result of that?
Well, as for the school shooter, not a great deal. I mean, it's been covered. It's on the pages, front pages here, but not a great deal comment. The Austin bomber, again, it's the same, except that there is a bit of comment about the fact that Trump was rather slow in sending his condolences to the Hispanic and Black families involved. There was a few references to that, and it would appear as if the bomber was, in fact, Caucasian. But, you know, it's not nearly as big as the Florida school thing. A lot of the comments have already been made about the issue.
Okay. It is interesting that there's a focus on race, even within the European press, on that. As far as his acknowledgement of the deaths, it's one of those things that, well, it's a head scratcher here, how that is continued to be generated. But I'm fascinated by the fact that it's noted even in the European press. Moving on, school walkouts this past Wednesday. What was the coverage of that in relationship to the events in Parkland, Florida? Was there much coverage about what schools were doing about the...
Not a great deal of coverage. It was covered. It was referred to. I think they're waiting for the big demonstration in Washington this weekend.
Then let's talk about another story that has been generating a lot of conversation here in the States. Cambridge Analytica, and Facebook. And this is going to detail into more issues directly associated with Facebook here in a moment. But what is the coverage of that and opinions?
Wall to wall.
Really?
Yeah, it really is wall to wall. You know, I mean, a British company is basically being accused of using Big Brother 1984 style tactics to help Donald Trump win the election. And they, in fact, are proud of it. They have been recorded by a secret camera by a British television station, basically boasting about it, saying we won the election for Trump. And we used it by, well, they didn't say underhanded tactics, but it was pretty clear. Now, you know, ask the next question, I think, is the best way to do it. But
the question, of course, goes to the role of Facebook. What is the opinion of Facebook there in the UK and the European press? This actually segues into a greater concern related to the economies of the European community. But what about the role of Facebook in this?
You know, Mark Zuckerberg is being called up, going to be called before a Commons Committee, House of Commons Committee, a European Parliament Committee, and a Congressional Committee, I understand, as well, to try and explain this. Now, Facebook has a rule which, well, Facebook, it's a business. It's
right.
a business.
Right.
It talks about bringing the world together, but effectively it's a business. It gathers together data on all of its users and sells that to advertisers so that Facebook becomes a platform for their advertising. It says in its terms and conditions that the data that is on Facebook cannot be used by third parties. It can only be used by Facebook and the advertisers. Now, what's happened is a Cambridge professor called Alexander Koga came up with a way of mining the data. And he sold that the app that was used to mine it to Cambridge Analytica. According to both the professor and Cambridge Analytica, they did with this with the full knowledge and permission of Facebook.
And by the way, Facebook acknowledges further that many of the folks that participated in this source of information were paid for it and acknowledged the recognition that this information was being gathered. That's their argument here right now.
Well, you know, but what was it being gathered for? Was it being gathered for political purposes? I mean, what was used with the information, the way the information was used, according to various whistleblowers, is that they were able to micro-target fake news to various Facebook users, and that this significantly influenced the elections in the U.S. It also is believed to have influenced the referendum vote on Brexit here in the U.K. and elections in Kenya.
Is there a feeling there in, for example, the U.K., and we'll bring up the issue of Brexit here later on in our conversation with you, Tom. Of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Is there a feeling that maybe then the Brexit vote was tainted?
It's not a huge feeling at the moment, but I don't know how much difference it would make if it did. I mean, I don't know how they could turn the clock back, just as I don't know how they could turn the clock back. You can't annul the election in the U.S. I don't think you can. I don't think you can annul the Brexit referendum here. I mean, it'd be very difficult. I think we have to move forward from where we are.
I think that's a wise thought on your part. I don't always give you that compliment.
Now, would you mind repeating that, Lovely?
Yes, I'll tell you what. I'll do that right after this break. We are joined by, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. We're going to continue this conversation for a few more minutes on the issue of Cambridge Analytica and the influence it had on votes, both here in the United States and in Europe, and maybe in Russia as well. We'll find out about that in just a moment. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, and he's insisting that I repeat and say that I just accused him a moment ago of a wise thought. And that, of course, is there's no way to replicate the votes that were taking place for Brexit or, for that matter, in the 2016 election. But I think the important part of this conversation, Tom, goes back to Cambridge Analytica and Facebook. And I'm curious here, and of course, you mentioned a few moments ago that Facebook, that Zuckerberg is going to be being called before a variety of political organizations. You said even in the United Kingdom, they're demanding
yes.
that he he make an appearance. The question goes to the overall influence of social media, even in Europe. We think of it as being a particularly U.S.-American activity, but how influential is social media even there in the United Kingdom? And let's go over to the pond.
It is more influential than in the U.S.
Really?
There are more users of social media in Europe than there are in the U.S. There are more users of social media in Kenya than there are, because basically everyone has an iPhone, a smartphone, in Kenya. It's become a part of their everyday lives, much more so, because they don't have phones and other things. They don't have your landlines, and they don't have the electricity to generate
TV
power for television
and things
like that.
Wow. Okay, now, you know, that's a conversation that hasn't been had, and I commend you on that one, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. All right.
Twice in one program.
I am every now and then. Well, that's because you have a good host or co-host here asking these very incisive questions. Very quickly, before we wrap it up with you, the influence of social media on the election in Russia. And we're going to get back to that in a few moments. But is there some feeling that maybe there is a Russian connection here?
Well, yeah, there's feeling that there was a Russian connection. Russians are very good at planting fake news and bots and cyber warfare, and they've developed techniques for that. There is no connection that we know of between the Russians and Cambridge Analytica. So, Cambridge Analytica is very much an independent company, entrepreneurial company. I think the thing about going back to Facebook is that there's no suggestion that Facebook or even Cambridge Analytica or Alexander Koga have broken any laws, because there are no laws to cover it.
I agree with you on that one. And I think it's also an issue of the naivete of, in some instances, the users, but also governments in general. And this has been a topic of discussion in the past among European communities, the concerns of the, if you will, the monolithic capacity and presence of this social media. And I know that there's some discussions about the possibility of setting, if you will, some form of throttle on these monolithic organizations, particularly Google, Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft, that the European community is concerned about the significant influence these businesses have in general and specifically. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Yes. And I think the U.S. I think you're going to see laws coming out of the U.S. as well.
I think so, too. Let's move on to other items associated with the U.S. here for a few more minutes. The topics predominantly around the president. Let's talk about the stories associated with President Trump and Stormy Daniels and now other accusations. Again, is this a salacious interest to the Europeans, or is there political interest to the Europeans, or maybe both?
Sex and politics, of course it's of interest.
I mean, it's,
or should I say sex and politics?
Well, I mean, it is interesting. There of course, is a great deal of shock about this, predominantly from the Democrats and the liberals in our country, totally ignoring the fact that there was at least two presidents, Kennedy and Clinton, who have interesting and colorful experiences while in the White House. I'm curious, is there much in the way of opinions in the European press about this right now?
Oh, there's a lot, yes. But it's not so much, you know, the fact that, it's more or less accepted fact that, Donald Trump has had a lot of affairs.
Wait a second. These are accused.
Unmarried, single. I'm serious. That is more or less, I'm telling you, what is more or less accepted.
Okay.
The question is whether or not he is trying to obstruct any potential justice claims or whatever, obstruct any legal processes involving his sex life. Now, that is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where Clinton came up short, but not completely short, because he wasn't impeached. He was impeached, but he wasn't thrown out.
Right.
And I, you know, people are basically more or less accepting that Stormy Daniels is telling the truth.
Okay, but my question is, does this in any way, of course, I would argue with you quickly, probably, or say to you quickly, based on your observations and recognition of President Trump's capacity as president, is there a feeling in the European community that this in any way diminishes his political and governmental abilities?
Yes.
Really?
It does. It does, because he denies it, well, and therefore it goes to credibility.
Okay. All right. We'll accept that. Of course, my thought is that there are many in the European community who've, you being one of them, who've questioned his credibility from the outset. Let's move on to another item with the president, one that we'll take a few minutes before we take our next break, and that is a visit by the Saudi Crown Prince, Hamad bin Salman. He is with President Trump. He's also visiting with various political leaders in the country outside of the presidency. What is the feeling about this? What's the coverage?
Not a great deal of coverage about it. He's on a sort of month-long around-the-world cultural trip to try and promote Saudi Arabia, the new Saudi Arabia, the new improved Saudi Arabia, where women can drive cars and go to the cinema, and to play down the Saudi role in Yemen and so forth. He's going to be visiting not just Trump, of course, but he's going to be going to Detroit and Silicon Valley and lots of other places. I think he's off to Texas as well. He'll be signing deals worth billions and billions of dollars to make everyone happy. But, of course, nobody really likes the Saudis because their human rights record is so bad, but they all want the Saudis' money.
And oil.
And oil. And from Trump's point of view, he wants the Saudis' support as a bulwark against Iran, and he needs the Saudis' support to try and drag the Palestinians to the negotiating table, which is not going very well.
Now, here's a question. You're saying that President Trump and of course, the U.S. interest associated with Iran and, of course, Israel and the Palestinians. What about the Europeans? What is their feeling about the role that the Saudis may play in this? Is there not something that the European is...
Are we talking about Iran, or are we talking about Yemen, or what?
We're talking about predominantly...
It varies from European country to European country, but okay. Basically, they all need Saudi oil as well.
But wait a second. They also need. But it strikes me they would want peace in the world there as well. Now, Yemen is a different story. And I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take a break before we get into that. But I think it's an important component of this. But let's talk about just the issue of Iran and Palestine and Israel. You know, things are improving in the Middle East in some regards, with the exception of Iran and Turkey, quite frankly.
Well, that's debatable. I think that if we're talking about Iran, the Europeans look at the Iran nuclear deal, and they see it as a means of bringing Iran into the world system and into trade and things like that, giving them a stake in a peaceful solution. Whereas outside of the Iran nuclear deal, which they see as rather key, there's a danger that Iran will revert to rogue nation status, develop its nuclear weapons, and launch an attack on Israel.
All right, we're going to get back to that in a moment, because I would argue quickly
or
that...
Or Saudi Arabia.
All right, well, there's many here in this country who question the, again, I'll use the word naivete, of thinking that Iran is anything but a rogue state. We'll get to that in a moment. First, just to remind you, you are listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Facebook's stated mission is to give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. It also has an unstated mission, to make a shedload of money. It is incredibly successful at both. There are 2.2 billion active Facebook users. Mark Zuckerberg is worth $67.7 billion. But the rest of society is discovering that there is a price to be paid in invasion of privacy and erosion of political liberties. The problem is that the posted holiday snaps, political opinions, and declarations of love don't belong to you. They belong to Facebook, who run the data through clever algorithms to work out just what you're likely to want to buy. They sell that analysis to advertisers. The advertisers, in turn, use the information to micro-target consumers on Facebook. No longer do advertisers have to spend tens of thousands of dollars for a page of a glossy magazine to reach 200,000 users, of which possibly only 2% will be interested in their product. They now pay a fraction of the old price to reach 200,000 Facebook users, whose information that they entered on their Facebook page reveals them as a prime target. What's wrong with that? Advertisers reach a highly targeted international market, while consumers are offered the opportunity to buy the sort of goods and services they want at the best possible price. That must be a good thing. And yes, it is. But unfortunately, it does not stop there. Enter Cambridge academic Professor Alexander Koga and Cambridge-based digital analytical firm Cambridge Analytica. Dr. Koga invented an app which could extract information on 250,000 Facebook users and all of their connections, a total of 50 million Facebook users. It is unclear if Dr. Koga approached Cambridge Analytica or vice versa. But somehow they came together and Dr. Koga was paid to allow Cambridge Analytica to use his app to mine profile data on Facebook users. This data was then used for political purposes to plant fake news, misinformation, disinformation, and false information through the Facebook network, which was in turn picked up by other social media sites such as Twitter and Instagram, and finally the mainstream news. Cambridge Analytica's activities are alleged to have had a major impact on the U.S. presidential election, successive Kenyan presidential elections, and the Brexit vote. Mark Turnbull, managing director of the company's political arm, boasted that as far as Kenya was concerned, his company staged the whole thing. Taped by a hidden television news camera, he said, "We have rebranded the entire party twice, written the manifesto, done research and analysis messaging. I think we wrote all the speeches, and we staged the whole thing." As for Brexit, well, it depends on whom you spoke to and when. Before the latest furore erupted, both the Leave EU campaign and Cambridge Analytica were eager to give full credit to the Cambridge company. Aaron Banks praised the company in his book on the Brexit campaign. But lately, both sides have denied that any work was done and that any money changed hands. The issue is being investigated by Parliament. There is no doubt about the impact of Cambridge Analytica on the 2016 US presidential elections. CEO Alexander Nix made it clear to the same hidden camera that his company takes full credit for winning three key marginal states for Donald Trump. Former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon made no secret of the contribution of Cambridge Analytica. Facebook's Zuckerberg claims that he was unaware of the activities of Cambridge Analytica. The company say this is rubbish. The fact is that Facebook is being used increasingly to pursue political aims, and that because of its wide-ranging, all-inclusive nature, it has become a platform not only for mainstream political debate, but also for messages of hate and division. Facebook says it wants to build community and bring the world closer together. It is in danger of doing the opposite.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. And Tom, I get a lot of comments about our conversation, so I do appreciate you taking the time. Even though it is, well, now it's only 4:15 at your time as we are recording this. But when it's airing live, it will be into the 11 o'clock hour. Tom, of course, living in the United Kingdom. Tom, let's go back to the issue of the Saudis' efforts to, on a well, a goodwill tour, and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is in Washington, D.C. for 3 weeks, as a matter of fact, reaching out to make changes. He, of course, has been make changes both politically and economically. And, of course, we've mentioned the Saudi oil, but he is very concerned, has expressed this concern publicly, that the Saudis will not be able to rely on their oil reserves as, well, one, we see more competition entering the oil environment, or pardon me, the oil industry, particularly the United States, and, of course, Russia. And then you add to that the slow but continuous change in energy resources and sources being more focused on carbon footprints and things of this nature. It strikes me that the Saudis are being very aggressive economically as well. But again, this goes back to the role that they play in the Middle East. If a strong and economically sound Saudi Arabia exists, it's a good alternative to Iran, is it not? And you said earlier that there's concern about Iran being denied access to the nuclear table and becomes a rogue state. Well, Korea is a nuclear power, and it is a rogue state. So why do the Europeans see this as a loss for their efforts to, if you will?
The Europeans do not think Iran has gone all the way over to rogue state status, and they want to try and prevent it from doing so. That if it does, we will have very, very serious problems in the Middle East. That is their thinking.
All right. And then the other question, let's talk about Yemen very quickly. A lot of folks are not aware of that, and Yemen has not been much of an issue of coverage here in the United States, and I'm wondering about there in the United Kingdom and European press.
Yes, it's much more of an issue here. The reason is because Yemen has become a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And the tactics being used by the Saudis, and to be honest, the tactics being used by the Iranians as well, are pretty ruthless and genocidal.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the demonstrations against Mohammed bin Salman have been related, in fact, to his attacks on Houthi rebels in the Yemen. Oh. Both the British, the Americans, and the French are actually providing military and intelligence backup. They have special forces on the ground. They have mini bases stretched all around the Red Sea. Dubai also is providing support, or I should say the United Arab Emirates. So it's not just the Saudis on their own. And we are backing the Saudis, but a lot of people think we shouldn't be backing the Saudis simply because of the tactics they use.
Okay. I think it's an interesting story, and one, sadly, we're not getting a lot of coverage here in the States on. All right, moving on to other items. And we've talked about elections a few moments ago and the impact of Cambridge Analytica. Let's talk. I'm going to combine several issues. First one, of course, the issue of Putin's election, Vladimir Putin and Putin's election. And I'm thinking it was like 86% of voted in favor.
76%, I think.
76%. Well, it was a goodly number. What's the opinion of that election? First question.
Well, the opinion is, that it wasn't really fair. I mean, for a start, his main opponent wasn't even allowed to run.
Right.
Alexei Navalny.
Right.
So he basically eliminated anyone who was a serious opponent. He got the courts to declare them as invalid,
mm-hmm.
Or not able to run.
Right.
They had seven other candidates, most of them what we would call here in the UK paper candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they were there just to make it look good.
So
there are a lot of instances of double voting. The Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe did say that despite all this, they were well administered, the elections,
mm-hmm.
but had a lack of genuine cooperation.
Okay. Real quick question, because I want to move to a bunch of other items. What's the opinion? Has the European community accepted this election with support? What's been the attitude there in the European community?
They were very careful.
Uh-huh.
They've been very careful. I don't think Theresa May has said anything because of of course, this nerve gas attack.
Right, we're going to get to that.
Not sent any wishes one way or the other. Both Macron and Merkel were very careful not to express their congratulations.
Okay, whereas the president...
They sent him good wishes.
Okay, and the president of the United States, of course, extended his congratulations. And how was that?
And that has been covered wall to wall again here, along with the fact that the various intelligence agencies, National Security Agency, etc., advised him not to do so. And the fact that he's furious that it was leaked out, that he was advised not to do so.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just curious. And the response there in the European press, have they made comment about his expressions?
They see it as another suggestion or more proof of a possible collusion.
Okay.
To be honest.
All right. That's fine. I wanted to hear that. I wanted to hear what they're thinking. Let's move on to Russia and the nerve attack or nerve gas attack. Pardon me. And also a strangulation in the UK. What's the wrap up on that one right now?
All the diplomats have left. So 23 Russian diplomats have left the UK, and 23 British diplomats have been thrown out of the UK. Russia.
Russia.
Well, did I get the other way around? You know what I mean, anyway.
Yes, right.
And they're investigating. This latest one was this man Gushkov, who was found. Now they know he was found strangled.
Mm-hmm.
He was another opponent of Putin. They've got some voice recordings of Putin saying that our opponents overseas cannot escape us. And yet he continues to deny. This is something the defense experts are coming up with a phrase for it. It's called guerrilla geopolitics or gray zone fighting. And the idea is to sort of probe at your enemy's defenses all the time.
Right.
With things like this.
Well, that...
All the time. Probing.
Case
hacking, cyber warfare, nerve agents, and just to see how hard they will fight back.
That's an interesting observation. I'm interrupting you because I want to move on to a few other items very quickly before our next break. But that's been a disclosure and an accusation made here in the States related to hacking of various utility companies here in the United States. So that's an interesting term. One more time, it's called gray diplomacy, you said? Or guerrilla?
Gray zone warfare.
Gray zone warfare. I like that description. And you've heard it here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. Tom, let's move to a real quick item here. We mentioned a few moments ago the issue of Brexit, the transition. Apparently the agreement is happening, particularly with Ireland. Does that indicate to you that Brexit is actually going to occur?
No, it's not actually happening with Ireland. They've sort of kicked that one into the long grass, as they say.
Okay.
And they have a backup plan, which is that during the transition period of 2 years, Northern Ireland could come under EU control as far as customs are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, what they've agreed is to more or less extend the existing arrangement for almost everything for another 2 years to give more time to talk.
Wow.
This is making the Brexiteers very angry.
Because it's not
very,
happening
very
fast.
Angry.
Yeah, it's not happening fast enough.
Theresa May is being called Theresa the appeaser.
Uh-huh.
And things like that.
All right.
It's just like they've tacked 2 years onto membership of the EU.
Okay. Well, of course, the EU is, I think, would be agreeable to it simply because I don't think the European Union wants England to leave. The United Kingdom.
No.
Okay.
Well, this is, I think, what the Brexiteers are saying, you know, and there's always this saying, which is, there's nothing more permanent than the temporary.
Right. All right. I want to move to a real quick item, with about a minute and a half to go on this one. Ex-President Sarkozy held by police, of course, the French president that Macron replaced. What is the circumstance there? Why?
Well, it's an old story. It goes back to elections about 15 years ago when he was alleged to have accepted I think, $6 million in cash in suitcases from Gaddafi in Libya. Now, this, of course, is very much against election law, but they've had some new people come out of the woodwork to confirm this further. And for the first time, Sarkozy is being questioned personally by the police.
Well, the fact that he's accepted money from Gaddafi is just the individual's background is, of course, grave concern and one that shocks even me. Was not even aware of that. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. We're going to talk about three items very quickly here in just a moment. Korean talks in Finland, and is it Premier Z? Is it Premier or President Z from
President.
Z of warning to, on Taiwan, and then another humorous conclusion here in just a moment with Viewpoints Around the World and Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, two quick items before we get to the spring cleaning at Jerusalem's Wailing Wall. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Korean talks in Finland. How is that being promoted or covered? And what's the feeling about that in light of the fact that the president says he's going to do this?
Well, let's start from the fact that these were organized back about 6 months ago.
Okay.
They are sort of regular pseudo-academic talks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't stop them from being important because they've just been elevated to a new status. They've moved into the political realm, and they put an ex-South Korean ambassador or ex-American ambassador to South Korea in charge of the American delegation. 18 people altogether from South Korea, North Korea, and from the United States. They are stressing that denuclearization is not on the table. They're just trying to create an atmosphere for talks. They're trying to discuss other political elements. Denuclearization issues will come up later, but it's a start.
It is a start, and I think this is it's a big change from the past, at least from the past 4 years, just to use the random number of time. Let's talk about China and Taiwan.
I don't know if you noticed, but Trump signed a U.S.-Taiwan Travel Act, which basically said that high-ranking politicians, right up to president and prime minister, should visit each other's countries. Now, this has made President Xi in China rather cross.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so he has said, whoa, we don't like this. This is not part of our one China policy. He's particularly concerned that Taiwan, with American support, will move towards being completely independent, drop its demands for Chinese reunification, and say, we want to be a completely independent country. And that by exchanging high-level visits, that will confirm it. If, you know, you do have President Trump visiting Taiwan, it will certainly damage any chance of agreement in North Korea or over the South China Sea or over economic talks or anything like that. Taiwan is a red line issue for China.
Right. And, of course, we've seen this in experiences with the fact that Taiwan doesn't even have an ambassador to the U.S. They have not a consulate. I'm trying to think the proper description of it. You've being in diplomacy, they do have an office. It's just not received as a...
Yes.
It's like a
representative office, I think.
Right. It's not a full ambassadorship. All right. Real quickly, is there concern in the European community about this, or do they see this as just right now a matter of negotiation? If you will.
This is a matter between the U.S. and China at the moment.
Okay. Okay. We'll leave it.
Most of them do not have offices. None of them have offices in Taiwan other than, you know, permanent representative type or representative offices, trade offices.
That's okay. I just was curious how that was being handled there in the European press in the U.K. Now let's move to spring cleaning at Jerusalem's Wailing Wall.
Have you ever been to Jerusalem in the Wailing Wall?
No.
It's quite extraordinary. they have this huge, the foundations of Solomon's temple, and it's massive. And as you can expect from something which is 1,000 years old, it has a lot of cracks in it. And there's always at least 50 people leaning against the wall praying.
Mm-hmm.
They could be Orthodox Jews or they could be soldiers. There's one section for men, one section for women. And they pray, and then they write out their prayer, and they put it in the cracks of the wall
mm-hmm.
for God to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wondered when I saw it, I said, what happens to all those prayers? And I discovered the other day, twice a year, they clean them all out. They get special sticks, cram them into the wall, pull out all the prayers, and take them all off to the Mount of Olives and burn them.
Wow. I think a lot of people are not aware of this. That's fascinating. How did you discover this, Tom?
Oh, like I do most things, just sort of crawling around on the internet.
Hard work.
My difference is that I do it all the time looking for things. Other people just do it once a month.
We call those people lurkers. But you're lurking in the recesses of the internet. And with that, Tom, Good Friday is very near upon us, and then following that, Easter. How active involved is Good Friday then in the United Kingdom, for all intents and purposes?
We get an extra holiday, I think. We get Good Friday and Easter Monday off.
Really?
Yes.
So now...
Most of Europe does.
Very interesting, because we've got...
I will be entertaining relatives from North Carolina over Easter.
Oh, I didn't realize we were expected. Okay, we're talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Look, we are not relatives. LookAheadNews.com.
Thank goodness.
Yes, thank goodness for me, for sure. Tom Arms of Viewpoints Around the World, LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, good evening to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.